welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd be stricken with uveitis if I saw that you missed today's show. Improv for Culture and Creativity. A performer and a board member from Washington Improv Theater teach us how improvisation can make your team more creative, confident, supportive, and successful. They're Crystal Ramsor and Graziella Jackson. That's part of our 20 NTC coverage. Also, Tech Policies. Karen Graham and Dan Getman want to help your staff avoid scams, malware, and inappropriate data handling. Might you have employees using personal phones or computers for work? You especially need to listen. Karen is with Tech Impact, and Dan is at Mana. This is also part of our 20 NTC coverage. On Tony's Take Two, thank you. We're sponsored by Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, wegnercpas.com. By Cougar Mountain Software, Denali Fund is their complete accounting solution made for nonprofits. Tony.ma/Cougar Mountain for a free 60-day trial. And by Turn 2 Communications, PR and content for nonprofits. Your story is their mission. Turn-2.co. Here is Improve. Brilliant. Yes, this is the lackluster host that you're stuck with. Here is Improv for Culture and Creativity. Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 20 NTC, the 2020 Nonprofit Technology Conference. You know the conference had to be canceled, but you know we're persevering virtually. We're sponsored at 20 NTC by Cougar Mountain Software. Denali Fund is their complete accounting solution made for nonprofits. Tony.ma/Cougar Mountain for a free 60-day trial. My guests now are Crystal Ramsor and Graziella Jackson. Crystal is Chief Administrative Officer at the National Council of Negro Women. Graziella is partner and CEO at Echo & Co. Also, Crystal is a teacher and performer and board member at Washington Improv Theater, which is most relevant to what we're talking about today. Mm-hmm. And Graziella is a board member at WIT, Washington Improv Theater. Yes. Crystal, Graziella, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Good to have you. I'm glad we could work this out. I'm glad you're each well and safe in our nation's capital area.
Thank you.
You're both in DC, DC proper.
Yep.
Your NTC topic is Improv Saves the Nonprofit, Boosting Culture and Team Creativity. That's interesting because I am on, how does it do that? Oh, even though I'm on, airplane mode. Oh, because of Zoom, because we all the three of us started a few minutes early. That's why
it's asking you to improvise.
Yes.
It's very timely and relevant.
Thank you, and I didn't do a very good job. Call it out for what it was. I didn't even do it. So, Crystal, let's start with you. How come improvisation can help us out creatively, effectively, team building? What about it?
Yeah. So. I think one of the biggest things I love about improv is it really pushes you to stay present and stay in the moment and focus on what we're working with right now and then creating together. So I think a lot of times in business or right, you're in meetings and you're having thoughts about ideas and people are like, well, we tried that idea last year. It didn't work. We tried it 10 years ago. It didn't work. Or if we do that, and then people are already thinking of reasons why we can't do something, but right, improv focuses on, no, we're working with what we have right here in the present, and presently, these are the parameters. Why couldn't we try this? And the number one rule in improv is yes and. So if we say yes, how do we then take that idea and continue to build something together? And I think when you, just those principles right there, make for a better working community.
Graziella, there's also a confidence building, right? You walk out on the improv stage. I'm taking the example of just two people. I mean, I know there are team exercises and everything, but you walk out with just two people. One of you has an opening line
and you got to build a sketch around it for the next 4 to 5 minutes around that one opening line. And the other person, doesn't know what that opening line even is.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think there's an incredible freedom that comes from what Crystal was saying with presence, because if you are able to, and I think what improv teaches you to do, to just respond to what's given to you in the moment and say, like, I don't have to do this huge thing right now. I don't have to entertain this gigantic audience. All I have to do is take this thing that my partner contributed as a gift and build on it. You find yourself being able to create things with a lot more freedom, with less, much less of the fear that comes from like worrying about the benefit of your contribution or whether or not you had the perfect or the right answer. And I think one thing that I learned just in taking trainings on this and being a part of the board is you have to be as willing to abandon what you've contributed and contribute something new, and just be constantly moving forward with creative ideas rather than getting stuck in the mindset of judging what you just created. So it's kind of separating your creative brain from your critical brain.
Yeah.
And it's super important.
That's interesting. You don't have time to self-censor. You're in front of an audience. You heard a line and you're supposed to build on it.
Yeah. And there's something exciting about the act of discovery. Like when you really invest in that thing that you're building together, you're probably going to find something that's even more interesting and funny and entertaining. I know, Crystal, you do this all the time and some of the exercises that you've led, but it's sort of being willing to just keep going because you're going to build something bigger and more exciting and more powerful if you just don't stop yourself.
And Crystal, you keep going regardless of what the audience reaction is, right? You don't just walk off stage when line number two, you know, didn't get a huge laugh or wasn't even supposed to get a laugh, right? Mm-hmm. You can't just walk off stage and say, oh, you know, screw it.
No, and you're in this together with your scene partners. I think I love that, like, we are out here. Wow, we made this choice to be aliens in the West, and you know what?
Right.
That's where we are at, and we got to commit to this, and we just commit harder to it, right? And see where it leads.
Like, you've said aliens, and I'm thinking like robots in a cornfield. All of a sudden, we have to build a robot family, the two of us.
And, yeah.
And we're just, you know, whatever. all right, so Crystal, were you going to be doing exercises if you had the opportunity to do the session?
Yeah,
you going to be doing some improv games or anything?
Yep. Yeah. So we had, Gracie, I can go through the game. So we had a list of games really to kind of show a little bit of intro into improv, doing some yes and. I know Graciela has the list.
Yeah, I can pull it up. I think it started with, because I think...
Well, I'll tell you what, instead of reading the list, we never do an improv. We don't just talk about what we're going to do, right? Sit around like a board talking about
it. I'm going to read this.
We actually do it. Not just talk about, oh, wouldn't it be funny if we did this? Oh, this would be fun to do that. And, you know, so we never do that. So how are we going to do an improv, the three of us, that will some kind of game that will bring home, of course, the lessons that we're trying to learn in terms of culture, team building, confidence, creativity, efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do? I'm putting you on the spot deliberately.
Can we plan a vacation?
Yes, let's plan a vacation.
I was just telling Cassie. So let's do this. So we're going to plan a vacation and we'll plan it with the three of us. We'll go, I can start, and we'll go from me to Graciela to Tony, and then we'll just keep circling like that. So the way we'll do it is we're trying to plan a vacation for the three of us. The first line of the sentence, when you respond to someone, has to be yes and then you can push it forward from there. Cool? So, I'm so glad that we're doing this vacation. I really think we need to go somewhere warm.
Yes, and we need to go somewhere warm immediately.
Yes, and we can, I mean, I'm already packed. Let's go. I mean, I love the Caribbean. Have either of you been to the Caribbean?
Yes, and I've decided I'm just going to buy all of us a new wardrobe while we're there. So I don't even, Graciela, if you're not packed, we don't even need to pack. Let's go right now. And I say we have margaritas as soon as we get there.
Yes. And after the margaritas, we'll party a little bit and then we'll go snorkeling.
Oh, yes. And since I'm not bringing any clothes now, I'm just going to go snorkeling naked.
Yes. And we're going to feel the water. And I bet we'll make friends with dolphins.
Yes. And everybody will get excited about what we're doing and they'll want to join as well.
Oh, yes. And this party is just going to get even bigger. Let's invite more folks, not just the three of us.
Yes. And let's blast this to everyone that we've ever met and tell them, jump in the water with us and let's make this the new party.
Yes, and let's see if we can get a boat so we can take this party to other islands.
Oh, yes. And while we're going between the islands, we can be fishing. There's like, we can dive off the boat on our way to the other island. So the boat is part of the fun.
Perfect. There we go. I love that activity.
It's time for a break. Wegner CPAs. I said a couple of weeks ago, the shit is hitting the fan fast. It's still coming down at us. That's a mixed metaphor, really. Because if it's hitting the fan, it's not coming down. It's being blown at us. It's coming fast. It's still raining down on us. It's blowing on us. It's hitting the fan and it's still blowing on us. That's better. Anyway, the shit is there. However it got to us, we're covered in it. Wegner has a new free webinar on July 1st to explain the latest on Paycheck Protection Program loan forgiveness. You know you need to apply for it. You don't get it automatically. Now what? Wegner explains. To register, go to wegnercpas.com, click resources. Now back to improv for culture and creativity with Crystal Ramsor and Graciela Jackson.
What we do sometimes when we do it, we'll start the activity by saying, you first have to plan a vacation by doing no, because you say no, but, and you do it that way. Or you say no, because, and you try to plan a vacation and it's so hard, right? Because every time you throw out an idea, like let's get a boat, the person's like, no, because I'm scared of a boat. And so you realize you don't do anything. You're really
becoming
left where you
smaller,
are.
And the idea is becoming smaller, mm-hmm. smaller and harder to deal with mm-hmm. instead of broadening. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So Krista, what did we learn from what we just did in a couple minutes?
One, we learned, what happens when we all like let ourselves be creative and have the wildest thought that we've ever had? You know, if you just, we're in a meeting and we want to figure out how we increase this sales numbers. Let's just throw out the wildest thing we've ever thought and let's play with it for a little while and let's not shut it down right away. Let's play around with this idea and see what we can come up with together.
Okay. Graciela, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I think that it's really, really important because I think where organizations, especially nonprofit teams, get stuck most often because they're in fast-paced, scarce resource environments where, you know, every dollar you spend on an idea is really important. I think that bringing this technique in and allowing yourself some space to say, let's just separate the creation of ideas from the judging of ideas and the vetting ideas, and try to get to a place where we are envisioning what's possible because it's counter to our culture and has to be in some ways to do that. And so it just allows you to get past, you know, the first three or four ideas, which are always the ones that are more familiar, safer, probably more likely to be accepted, and really set those aside and push yourselves to think in new ways about challenges. There's no risk in spending the time coming up with ideas. And if you can use these tools to get everybody feeling comfortable and open and curious and creative, and you know, you can design the collaboration really well and bring games into it, you end up with this whole inventory of possibilities that then you can take into a more critical process and evaluate and put things like metrics and objectives around them. But chances are people will feel more included in the process. They'll forget that time is passing because they'll have fun. Yeah. They'll feel like the quality of their ideas is better, and they'll feel like they accomplished something that then they can take and turn into something better.
You got to have some rules around this, right? Like,
yeah,
we're not judging. We're not saying, oh, that idea sucks. You know, it's, you know, sort of classic brainstorming.
Yeah.
It's just the free flow of ideas.
Yeah. The one that Washington Improv teacher, Washington Improv Theater teaches us is definitely the concept of yes and that Crystal mentioned. There's also the concept of let go. And that's about just removing your bias and your preconceived notions and the things you're bringing into the room with you. Just let go of all of those. Notice everything, because probably the things that you're ignoring also have possibility, and we're so used to not letting go and then only noticing what's important to us. And then I think the last one is use everything. It's sort of whatever is brought into the room, see if you can apply it to something, even if it's to honing, you know, your idea, improving your idea. I don't know, Crystal, did I represent those well enough?
Absolutely. No, I think especially when you talk about using everything, that's the other part about that exercise that I like so much. It's forcing you to listen to what the person before you just said, really listen to what they said, because you have to build off of it. So instead of just, you're already thinking of your idea, you can't think of it yet. You need to wait to hear what that other person says.
Yeah. I think, like, when you think about how work is changing right now, in addition to needing to be open, more collaborative, more agile, getting things out the door faster with less resistance, a lot of that has to do with also being able to take a systems view of things. And if you're not actually using these techniques and these approach to build an understanding of the scope of what you're dealing with. So if you're thinking about like social change or environmental change, the idea is you have to envision the system. And if you spend 30 minutes sort of saying, this is important, no, it's not. This is important, no, it's not. Versus let's spend the next hour identifying everything about this system that's important. Then you can start to, you know, group those things and come up with plans around those things. So it's incredibly helpful for strategic planning.
Or just everything, not everything that's important, but everything that impacts
Everything
that's around this system, outside influences, our own influences, our own biases, everything that impacts our work.
Yeah.
And then we'll categorize what we have control over, what we don't, what's significant, what's less significant, things
like that.
Okay.
We had this this organization we're working with is a large labor union, and we're working with them on rethinking their web presence. And they have more than 30,000 pieces of content across lots of websites. And our content strategist did an exercise. Do you know Marie Kondo? It's a Netflix show about just like taking everything out of your closet, putting it in a pile, going through it, cleaning it until everything around you brings you joy. I've never seen it, but she created this exercise, which was more or less improv, that didn't get to, let's talk about all of the content that you're going to be losing from this web presence. Let's spend time sort of improvising what it's like to move out of a house. What do you do in what order? And she went through this really detailed activity where people built the experience of what it's like to move a house. And then they designed that whole process and system. And then they basically compared that to what it's like to cleanse 30,000 pieces of content. And people immediately understood the process because they are familiar with this challenge of needing to move your house, if you've been through that before. And so they forgot that what they were doing was planning change management. Mm-hmm. All they did was were planning something familiar to them and then borrowing from those concepts to accomplish this big scary thing that nobody wanted to do. So I think that's the power of this work and creativity and adapting the exercises to your space.
Crystal, let's talk some about the team building. Like I was saying earlier, you know, you walk out on an improv stage, two of you, one of you's got an opening line from a word that an audience member threw out, and you're each counting on each other to do yes and follow all the other, you know, principles of bring everything in that you've got and not censoring yourself, et cetera. But you're building on each other. It's confidence building and team building. So for the individual and for the team of two, or it could be a bigger team. Talk some about that, how improv helps that way around team cohesion.
Yeah. And I think it also, it helps, trust is the other part of it as well that I think, that builds. I worked with a group where we, an organization, and their, one of their issues was they had a whole issue around hierarchy. They just hired a bunch of people and let go of a bunch of people. And a lot of people, didn't feel like their work really mattered or that their voice mattered. And so they weren't sharing their ideas in meetings, and they actually brought a group of improvisers to come and do a whole workshop. And all the exercises that we did were focused on, no, everybody has a piece in what we're doing, and it's vital. And we need everyone to fully, fully do their work. And then I need to fully accept what you're giving me. Right. So, yeah, if we're walking out on that stage, it's a blank stage. That's what I always tell people. There's nothing there. So if I say we're aliens in Oklahoma, and you've got to agree that, yes, we're aliens. What does that mean? You know, we can bring that into this. And you got to agree where we are. And then part of it is the two of us that are on the stage, but then it's anyone else on the team, right? Whoever's going to edit that scene, whoever's going to wipe the scene, so then we're out of there. Everybody that is a part of this team, whether they're on stage right now or not, are still a part of what's happening and have a piece to play in how we do this. And I think that's that same thing when you talk about an organization, right? You have people that are clearly going to be the ones to make that final decision, but so everyone has some role that they need to play in order for everyone to feel that value too. And that, and a lot of the work that we do is building that trust that I know I can go out there and say something to you, and I know you're going to listen to me, you're going to pick it up, and we're going to build that together, and not you're going to shoot my idea down and say, we're not aliens in Oklahoma, we're just two people stuck in North Carolina, you know?
What else can listeners do, Crystal? Maybe another exercise that they can practice, or, you know, so that they can sort of see the benefits of, or reap the benefits of the improv principles?
Ooh, okay.
We don't have the benefit of actually doing the exercises. What else? What's another game folks can play to get some benefits? Either mm-hmm. of you, I guess, either Crystal okay. or either one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can, as Crystal, you're thinking about some, I think, there are simple exercises we can do, I think, to address very common feelings. One is just feeling blocked or feeling blank when someone asks you a direct question, because if you're at all, you know, if you don't think that way, or if you don't want to take center stage, or you have a fear of public speaking, the only way to overcome that is to practice, and you can practice in really small ways. So one thing we do with most organizations we go into and run creative workshops are very simple word exercises, where you have a group of people around a circle and you just say a word and you go around the circle and the person next to you says the first word that comes to mind. And it's about listening and learning about yourself when you're trying to anticipate what to say because you want to perform well versus really just being in the moment and offering a word. So if I were to say, Crystal, if I can borrow you for a minute and say the word blue.
And I'm sorry, and you want me to?
Oh, yeah. Just sorry, and I'm putting you on the spot. just like to say the first word that comes to mind after
that.
Oh,
you say
so,
blue.
Yeah.
Green.
Red.
Blood.
Death.
Church.
Community.
Improv.
Fun.
Laughs.
Joy.
Family.
Cool. And so on. And it's funny because even this exercise, the first time we do it with a group of people, let's say more than five people, everyone gets nervous. And we're not really doing anything. We're just saying mm-hmm. words that come to mind based on what somebody else said. So if you can just do that a couple times and talk about why is it, you know, a little bit of self-awareness, why is it that we feel uncomfortable in the moment? What's operating behind that? Is it that fear of contribution? It's kind of the fight, flight, freeze impulse when you're mm-hmm. on the spot. So I think, and there's tons of these games available yeah. online to use as warm-up activities or team building activities. I think we may have, or are going to have some on our website, which is echo.co. And it's just really important to get in the habit of not just jumping into a meeting, but offering some of these activities to help gain a sense of presence, a sense of what we call psychological safety, which is everybody feels like they are open to contribute without embarrassment or without mm-hmm. any criticism.
Without judgment.
Yeah, without judgment. Okay. So it's, yeah.
Okay, so there's some resources at echo, echo.co?
Yeah, yep.
Okay. Crystal, you mm-hmm. let's bookend. You opened up. Why don't you just take us out with some final thoughts, whatever you want, however you want to close.
Final thoughts. Okay, so I do want to share one of my other favorite exercises since we were just talking about it. And I love this one because I've taught improv with children. I teach improv with people who have taken classes, or I've actually done it. I teach improv at a homeless shelter as well. But my favorite exercise is panel of experts. And it's so fun because anybody can contribute, and you immediately, when we talk about building that trust, building that team, it's you can have really as many people, but you know, at least three, maybe do like 3 to 6.
All right, let's play it. All right, we'll go a little bit longer.
Let's cool.
For like a minute and a half or so. Get us started. What is it?
So panel of experts. Each of us, the three of us, we're doing like a TED Talk here where we have this audience, and we pick, and you can pick just a mundane thing, anything, and then we are going to be the experts of that thing. So we can go around in the same order that we did, and we are just going to be, it's as if we're, like I said, giving a TED Talk about whatever it is that we're talking about. Okay. So because I'm just been looking at Graziella's screen, I'm going to say, we'll talk about that bookshelf behind Graziella. So thank everyone for being here today. We have built the perfect bookshelf for any office. This bookshelf, which was developed by Dr. Alvin Smith, really made it so it can fit in any area that you need it to fit. It actually adapts to the office, to a closet, to a bathroom, really wherever you need this bookshelf, it morphs into what you need it to be. Graziella, could you talk a little bit about the development of that?
Yeah. So, you know, when we were conceiving of this perfect bookshelf, I think what we first asked was, you know, what is it that a bookshelf means to us through the journey of our life? You know, you start off as a young person, you are in your space, you're looking at a blank wall, and that wall doesn't mean anything to you. But if you fill it with something that can hold your treasures, your books, it facilitates this space of imagination and really opens up who you are as a person. So it really is more than a bookshelf. It's a place for you to showcase the aspects of who you want to become through life and also your identity. So that's kind of where we started. We want it to be exciting. We wanted people to say, that's not a bookshelf, that's me. And so that's kind of what we wanted to bring to the creation of this. Tony, do you want to talk a little bit about kind of how you've seen people respond to this bookshelf?
Well, I'm afraid we're out of time. We got to wrap. No, I know that's a violation of the rules. No, absolutely. Yeah, we brought this, you know, we brought this again, as you were saying, Graziella, to be much more than just the physical object. And so we've watched people interact with it. We've surveyed them formally, but we've actually been observing the way people use the bookshelf, the way they interact with it. There's the basket feature on the second shelf. That's pretty much open. That's open anything you want it to be. You can put your junk in there. You can organize it carefully, or you can put your knitting needles and balls in there. We've seen that too. Of course, the top. We've seen people interacting, being more organizational, since that's the part that shows, even if it is in a closet, like Crystal was saying, this could work in a closet as well as a wall. But if it is in a closet, you know, the top shelf is what people see the first. So we've seen people organize the top better. The middle has been more personal. And that's been exciting to see how people have just reacted to the different components that we engineered on very personal, you know, very personal creativity kind of levels.
Yes. Send Tony all of your pictures of your bookshelf.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, So what are we, no censorship, building on what others contribute, taking everything in.
You're an expert in it, right? So speaking with confidence about whatever the topic is. So, right, if we were just in a room, a topic, we could have picked anything, and we are experts on that topic. So you're speaking with confidence and still building this together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Let's leave it there. Did we say about that? Do we pull everything out that we can about that exercise? Because I didn't want to just do it for fun.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? The only other thing I'll say is just opportunities to replace competition with trust and celebration. I think that's kind of the name of the game. It really helps to just celebrate what people are bringing to the table and use that to inspire better things.
And that trust too. Each of you said, I wasn't on the hot spot with this, but you know, each of you led the next person with a question, mm-hmm. and your confidence that the person is going to take it. Mm-hmm. And is not going to object or fumble or, you know, but carry it further. Okay. Excellent. Thank you very much. Crystal Ramsour, Chief Administrative Officer, National Council of Negro Women, Graziella Jackson, partner and CEO at Echo & Co., and both deeply involved with WIT, the Washington Improv Theater. Thanks so much for being with me. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Crystal.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Tony.
And thank you for being with Tony Martinetti, nonprofit radio coverage of 20 NTC. We need to take a break. Cougar Mountain Software. Their accounting product, Denali, is built for nonprofits from the ground up so that you get an application that supports the way you work, that has the features you need, and the exemplary support that understands you. They have a free 60-day trial on the listener landing page at tony.ma/Cougar Mountain. Now it's time for Tony's Take Two. Thank you. Thanks for being with the show and staying with it through coronavirus and recession and protests against racism. I wanted to keep producing the show. I mean, there's no stopping the show. I mean, the show's got to go on. But all the more, I think, you know, just because things have been so tumultuous since, roughly March 23rd, or call it mid-March. So much confusion, change, new routines. The show has got to continue. There's got to be some things that we just can rely on. They're just going to be there. And nonprofit radio is one of them. And so I insist that, not that I was thinking about postponing or going on hiatus, but it's reassuring that some things remain unchanged, remain constant. You can count on them. And nonprofit radio is one of them. And thank you for being consistent, loyal, listening audience. Actually, it's upticked a little bit. It did, like in April and May. You know, more people spending a lot more time at home, right? Doing everything at home, from exercise to maybe more podcasts. So, thank you. So, I'm glad and gratified that audience hasn't declined. You haven't gone anywhere. The show still has value for you. That's very gratifying for me. I thank you for sticking with the show, still listening, and I'm just glad that you're still getting good information from it. So, thank you. That is Tony's Take Two. Now it's time for Tech Policies with Karen Graham and Dan Getman. Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 20 NTC. That's the 2020 Nonprofit Technology Conference. We're sponsored at 20 NTC by Cougar Mountain Software. With me now are Karen Graham and Dan Getman. Karen is Director of Education and Outreach at Tech Impact, and Dan is Senior Manager of Donor Relations for MANA. Karen, Dan, welcome back to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Well, for you, Karen. Dan, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to know that you're each well and safe. Dan in Philadelphia, Karen in Minneapolis. Good to know. I'm glad we could work this out. Your conference topic is establishing tech policies to protect your nonprofit. Karen, you and I have talked about tech policies in the past and other things that are, when you were with Idealware, were on the surface boring, and you were happy to call them that, but nonetheless important to your nonprofit. So would you mind doing the same, explaining the importance to what could sound like something very dull?
Sure. Well, I mean, regardless of what kind of situation we're in, we all know that there are good people that make bad choices. And so having some policy guidelines to help people to maybe think twice about those choices, to provide some guidance for them is helpful, but also having some clear consequences, I guess, in place or responses when people do make bad choices, that's also important to know how you're going to respond if somebody makes a mistake. Now, especially, I think nonprofits are feeling this in the, we're right now, as we're recording, we're in the midst of the coronavirus outbreak, and a lot of nonprofits have gone to remote work. And so they are, I think, thanking their lucky stars or their good judgment if they already have developed really good policies for remote work and use of personal devices and things like that. And if they haven't done that, they're scrambling right now to try to figure it out.
What are some of those bad choices that you're talking about?
Oh, one of the things that comes to mind immediately is a kind of choice that will lead to a security vulnerability. You know, just say sharing data that is private, that contains personally identifiable information with people that really don't need to have that information, downloading it onto a home computer, things like that. Like those kinds of choices can really make an organization vulnerable to that data getting into the wrong hands, or to like passwords and system access getting into the wrong hands. And I mean, I'm sure we've all seen the consequences of that. I actually have some data on that. The average cost of a data breach, according to a 2019 survey, was almost $4 million for a data breach. And nonprofits are just as vulnerable to that, if not more so, compared to their for-profit peers.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, certainly. We think about organizations in the healthcare arena. But even outside healthcare, there are dates of birth, there are credit card numbers, other personal, you might have social security number for some reason. So all that personally identifiable information.
And all of that can compromise people's privacy. And it also can make an organization really vulnerable to ransomware attacks, where the hacker threatens to release that information to the public or misuse it in some way that can really destroy the organization's reputation and be harmful to the people that they serve. So that's something that actually nonprofits are especially vulnerable to because of the kinds of information that they handle, and also because, unfortunately, many nonprofits have not invested in security to the level that they should.
Yeah. All right. Dan, let's bring you in. You're in your office, so we hear a little background noise. That's okay.
Sorry.
I presume there are not strangers walking through Karen's home in Minneapolis, so it must be your office. But that's okay.
No, that would be me, yeah.
That's okay. We have lives. It's all right. It's all right. Just letting people know. Karen is secure. There's nobody walking through her family room. Dan, so Mana has been working on comprehensive tech policy, or has finished. What's Mana's role in this?
Sure. So we put together a bunch of different policies last fall. And I hesitate to say the word finished because they're always evolving. We need to adapt what we do and the policies that reflect what we do as things change around us. For instance, a lot of the policies that we instituted last fall were directed or directly affected, I should say, are like the computers that we have here. For years, we all used PCs in much the standard way that anybody else would. And with the advent of cloud-based systems like Azure and some other things that we worked with Tech Impact to implement here, we were able to get on a more secure server. We were able to update a lot of the levels of encryption that we use, all things going along with what Karen was talking about in response to not wanting to be vulnerable to attacks, to ransomware. We deal with individuals who have really serious health concerns. They're the client base to whom we deliver meals on a regular basis to. And so we work with all kinds of personal information. We also have, certainly as a nonprofit, donors who have credit card information and other things that get stored within our systems. And so between medical records and all the things kept therein and credit card information for our donors, you know, we have a couple different avenues that a potential threat, you know, might see as inviting. And so as an organization that works with insurance companies, large insurance companies, we need to be as HIPAA compliant as any medical office would be, doctor's office, hospital system. And so we've gone through some work with a HIPAA consultant. We've worked directly with Tech Impact, who also does our day-to-day tech support here, to really, really develop well-thought-out policies, as well as all the software sort of implementations that went along with it. So, again, I'd hesitate to say that we're finished, because we're always looking at ways to improve how tightened up we can be. But in terms of where we're at today, the large bulk of that was completed last fall.
There's something interesting. You're the director of, or senior manager, pardon, I just demoted you. Senior manager of donor relations, not IT. That doesn't sound like the tech policy position at Mana, but here you are.
So it's interesting. Yeah, I think many nonprofits will probably understand we use the phrase we wear a lot of hats. You know, that many nonprofits are smaller staffed. You know, we don't have the budgetary capabilities to have an in-house IT department. And so for years, our office admin served in that role, still does in many cases. If your Outlook isn't working, if your internet's down, that's who you go to. But as we were growing these contract relationships and learning that there were different levels of security that we could, you know, reach for, we needed somebody in-house who had both a cursory understanding of the tech side of things and also enough understanding and ability to work with our nutrition team to sort of understand the HIPAA ramifications of it all. And it just so happened that that role probably would have fallen to the office admin, who does a lot of the other day-to-day stuff. However, he went out on medical leave, and so I was sort of tasked with this being the next in line in terms of my computer savvy, I guess we can call it. It's just sort of a nonprofit thing that, you know, you have a skill set that you're able to help with. It may not be the thing I'm trained in or went to school for by any means, but I understand it maybe better than the next person, and so that's how that kind of works out.
I understand. Time for our last break. Turn to communications. Relationships. The world runs on them. We all know this. Turn 2 is led by former journalists so that you get help building relationships with journalists. Those relationships will help you when you need to be heard, so that people know you're a thought leader in your field when there's a time for you to be heard and to show your expertise. Turn 2 specializes in working with nonprofits. They're at turn-2.co. We've got buttloads more time for tech policies from 20NTC. We could also consider good tech policy to be a part of donor relations, or a part of stewardship, actually. A part of what you're doing, I don't mean you at Mana, but part of what an organization is doing is protecting donor information from the kinds of attacks that you and Karen are both talking about. So you could consider it an an element of donor relations and good donor
sure
relations.
And part of it came back to, you know, in the donor relations side of things, I oversee our database, our CRM here. And so, again, understanding those systems, knowing that we treat and have always treated all information confidentially. We don't share lists with people. We don't sell our donors' information to anyone. Certainly, we never do that with any client information. But from my sort of day-to-day roles perspective, you know, we treat all that data with the same level of integrity that we would with our client data on the other side of the building. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of where that stemmed from.
Okay. Yeah, Karen, go ahead.
Well, I've been kind of listening to what Dan's saying and even what I said when we opened up here, where we're focusing on technology policies to reduce the organization's risk or, you know, to kind of like looking at it from the perspective of what are the bad things that could happen and how do we prevent those? And I just want to make the point that that's not all that policies are for, right? They're also to give people guidance on positive things they can do. So at my organization, just today, we were talking about social media policy. And that's something I'm sure that Dan probably deals with too, doing donor management and fundraising and communication. You don't want to just wag your finger at your staff and say, you can't do this, you can't do that. Especially when it comes to social media, you want to give them some tools and some permission to be able to do things that are positive and are going to benefit the organization. So that's always an important thing to remember with policy is to find that balance between the things that are restricting people from doing things that are really going to be harmful and the things that are empowering them to do things that are going to be helpful.
Karen, what do you see sometimes, or most commonly, I should say, as the impetus for revising or creating when they don't exist at all, a new set of tech policies?
Probably two things. And one, unfortunately, is something bad happens. And then somebody says, oh, we should have had a policy about this.
Yeah.
You can imagine how those scenarios play out. But the other thing is sometimes a change in staff or a staff member who has listened to a podcast or they have attended a conference or somehow been exposed to these ideas and realized, oh, shoot, my organization doesn't have the right policies in place. We should probably pay attention to this.
Okay. All right. And since you're the consultant, why don't you get us into this process now? How do we begin? What do we need to think about? Who are the stakeholders who need to be involved before we can actually start typing policy or thinking about policy?
Yeah, I can share a few things with you. First, there are six basic types of policies that most organizations should have. And so acceptable use is one. And what that means is it's a guide to the overall use of your networks and technology equipment. That's acceptable use policy. Second one is security. And that's really about protecting your data and your systems from security breaches. Third one is a bring your own device policy, which has considerations for employees using personal devices to do their work, whether they're in the workplace or right now, a lot of people are using personal devices that they have at home to access corporate data, so to speak, or things that are owned by the nonprofit. So those are the first three. And then the fourth one is an incident response and disaster recovery policy and a plan. That's what you need to do if something goes wrong. Fifth one is remote work, kind of other considerations for employees who are working outside the office. And then the final one is about social media and digital communication and guidelines for what you can and should do and what's restricted there.
Okay. All right. So those are our sort of framework for our policy, those six types and who should be involved in the process of creating these?
Well, I think that's a great question to ask Dan because he had some experience with involving the right people in the organization. But my advice would be, you know, there's a saying that a lot of advocacy organizations or organizing groups use, nothing about us without us. And I think that applies here as well. It's if a policy is going to affect someone, then that person should probably have a chance to give some input in the policy. Otherwise, you're going to run into a lot of problems with people not following the policy, just working around it, and then it's not doing anybody any good.
Yeah, because then it's a policy that was foisted on right. end users rather than them being part of the collaborative team that develops it.
Right. So right. certainly an executive director, a board of directors in a nonprofit has some responsibility for reviewing policies and making sure that the right things are in place, but that's not enough. It also has to involve the people that are covered by the policy.
Yeah, the end users. How about you, Dan? Did you follow Karen's advice? Were you a compliant client or were you not?
I'd like to think so. I was involved from day one in terms of this stuff. And to Karen's point, yeah, we had everyone at almost every level in some capacity involved in this process. So when we first sat down with some of Karen's coworkers at Tech Impact, you know, we had in the room myself, the head of our nutrition department, our CEO, the head of our policy, and by policy I mean lawmaking policy, but the head of our policy department, and as well as our PR person, our office admin. So, I mean, it was kind of, to your point, we had somebody from every aspect of the organization who would be either affected by the policies being put in place or be the person who was actually implementing the policies themselves. Okay. And then we brought in, which was a tremendous help, and to be quite honest, we couldn't have done it without them. We brought in an outside consultant whose work is in the field, in our case specifically in tech security, and has a lot of background in, again, dealing with the folks that we work with, being medical record based. They came from a background with consultant work dealing with HIPAA-related issues specifically. Right. And so we had them come in and do a full risk assessment to go side by side with the risk assessment that Tech Impact did. And we had a really nice look at what policies do we have, what policies do we need, and what things are already in place, and where can we, you know, make some tweaks to get better. And so it really was a very collaborative effort, both internally and in terms of the two external groups that we worked with. But we needed every voice in that room.
Any difficulty, Dan, getting buy-in from leadership to this project?
So no, we're fortunate actually that we have a CEO who is one, very progressive and likes to be at the forefront of all aspects of you know, our business. So that includes technology. Again, we've been around 30 years. So dealing with our client records and the HIPAA related issues there has always been something that's mattered to us. And so this was seen as an opportunity to improve upon efforts that we were already making. It was not seen internally as, hey, this is a bad thing and we all got to go through this process to fix something. It was really more, we're doing a good job, but we can do better than what we're doing, and we're going to strive to do better than what we're doing. And so our CEO didn't require any real pushing. She was actually the one pushing all of us.
Okay. Karen, we don't have time to do in depth on all the six different policies that you mentioned, but since we're in a time now when a lot of people are using their own personal devices, why don't we focus on that policy, the personal use of devices for work? I defer to you. What questions should we be asking, or what mm-hmm. policies should we have in place? What's the best way to approach that one?
Sure. Here's some of the questions you could think about for that. One is, usually organizations start with who is allowed to use those devices. And in the situation we find ourselves in right now, I think it's almost everyone is allowed to use personal devices. Yeah. But maybe not. I mean, maybe if you're a nonprofit that is allowing people to work from home, either indefinitely or just for a defined period of time, maybe you want them to only be allowed to do their work on an organization-issued device. Maybe you'll provide them with a laptop or a tablet or whatever it is to take home with them, and they're only going to do it there. And then, you know, it's important then to issue some guidelines that let them know your home computer is off limits for conducting your work. So that's an example. But then it's not just computers. What about their camera? You know, if they're doing video conferencing, if it doesn't have a built-in camera, can they use their own or do they have to get one from the organization? What about a headset? What about like all that extra stuff? And then if they are using their own devices, what kind of support do you offer for that? If something breaks, do you fix it? If they have a problem with their settings on the computer, are you responsible as an organization for helping them with that? What about like antivirus software on their home computer? Are you now going to pay for the cost of that? Or are you going to pay for the cost of their cell phone, which they're now using to take calls because the office phone is being forwarded to their cell phone? So there's a lot of different issues there. One more thing that we find, especially with mobile devices, is like what kind of encryption do you require and locks and authentication and like different kinds of security measures that can be installed on a mobile device. It's not necessarily a case where more is better. You have to find the right balance between convenience and security there.
And what about use of or other people's use of that same equipment, you know, when they're home? Is it a family laptop that the person is using for work and then at night their kids do their homework on it? I mean,
Well, yeah, I think that's the reality for a lot of people right now. So I personally wouldn't worry too much about a criminal breaking into my home, logging into my computer that has a weaker password at home than the computer that I use for work, and, you know, getting into my organization's data or whatever. I just really don't think the odds of that are very high. But but it's more like maybe through email, maybe my kids open a phishing email and they click on something and then pretty soon my computer's infected. And I've also got stuff stored on that computer that I don't want to get into somebody else's hands. So that's where the vulnerability of shared devices probably is most important. I don't know if you would agree with that, Dan, or if you've thought through that with your organization.
Well, Dan, before we, I do want to go to you immediately, Dan, but just I want to make clear that we now know the password to Karen's home computer is 12345.
Yeah, no, I think this is a really important one, and we did go through this in terms of a lot of the policies that we're putting in place. We have a mixed set of media for this organization, desktop and laptop, and for those with laptops, they can certainly take them out of the building, and so there's, you know, safeguards there that needed to be in place. But the one that we really found, I don't want to say a stumbling block, but it's something that I think organizations should keep in mind when they're thinking about this kind of stuff. So many of us now have smartphones, and they're great, and they can do all these different things. The one thing that really got under a fair amount of people's skin here was the restrictions that had to be put in place for one's own mobile device. And specifically what we dealt with was in the case of our email client, Outlook is great and can be controlled with a lot of the policies that we put in place with Tech Impact. However, if you have an iPhone or an Android and you do not have the Outlook app, if you just use the native mail app on your phone, that is outside the scope and the control of a system like Intune or Azure. And so what we had issues with were people wanting to, you know, use the app that they've been using for the last 10 years and having to switch to something that was considerably more restrictive. And it's one of those things that's sort of the growing pains in this process, but was absolutely necessary for us to be able to, you know, rein in some of the control on the data that's being used. And to Karen's point with, you know, kids clicking on an email, you know, we have it set where, as an example, if I pull up an email on my phone, I can't screenshot it. I can't save whatever is in it to my phone. I mean, we have everything as locked down beyond you can read it and reply to it, and that's it. Yeah. But just knowing that some of those those things are out there in terms of the restrictions, in terms of the necessity to have them be protected. If I lost my phone and someone got into it, they could seemingly access information I wouldn't want people to see, you know, from a work standpoint. And so I think those are things that we take for granted, having these wonderful devices that we carry around every day, but they're really they are portals to our jobs and to our lives, and the security that needs to go with that is it can't be understated. And that was definitely something that we hadn't thought about, quite honestly, before this all happened.
Yeah, making compromises for company
absolutely
organization security. Karen, we're gonna wrap up. Does Tech Impact have any resources that are related to tech policies that that folks can access on the website?
Of course we do.
All right.
We've got lots. So on at techimpact.org, we have a number of resources about policies and security, which we've been touching on here too, including free consultations for people who just have a question that they want to ask of a professional.
Oh, wonderful.
You can request that on our website. So that's at techimpact.org. And then on idealware.org, which is also a site that is part of our organization, that's a resource site. And so we have a policy workbook on there that will help you, like, step by step develop each of the different policies that I mentioned earlier, and also a number of other knowledge resources. We've got a course right now too that we just finished a live version of it, and the recording's available at idealware.org if people want to really take a deep dive into this.
Outstanding. Thank you. And as former CEO of Idealware, I know you're well acquainted with the offerings there. Mm-hmm. That's Karen Graham, Director of Education and Outreach at Tech Impact, and Dan Getman, Senior Manager of Donor Relations at Mana. Thanks to each of you for sharing. Thanks so much. And
thank you.
And stay safe. And thanks to you for being with Nonprofit Radio coverage of 20 NTC. Next week, more from 20 NTC. If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. We're sponsored by Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. By Cougar Mountain Software, Denali Fund is their complete accounting solution made for nonprofits. Tony.ma/Cougar Mountain for a free 60-day trial. And by Turn 2 Communications, PR and content for nonprofits. Your story is their mission. Turn-2.co. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz managed the stream. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy. And this music is by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at talkingalternative.com.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com. Talking Alternative.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.